Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impoga, and this evening we'll talk about political developments in Zimbabwe. I'll be joined momentarily by my colleague, Blessing Zulu, from the VOA Zimbabwe service. He'll be joining me in a moment. Also joining us is Dewa Mazinga, a human rights lawyer and political analyst. He joins us by phone from South Africa in Johannesburg. Good evening, sir. Hello?
Evening, hello.
How are you doing today?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And my colleague will be joining me in a moment, but as I said in the introduction, Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe has appointed Emmerson Mnangagwa as his deputy, making the former justice minister the favorite to succeed him. Mr. Mnangagwa, nicknamed the Crocodile, is reputed to be a hardliner. Mr. Mugabe, who is 90 now, purged the government of seven ministers on Tuesday and as he tightened his grip on power. And he also fired, of course, as I said, the Vice President Joyce Mujuru, and accused her of she was alleged to have been trying to kill him. My colleague, Blessing Zuhu, has now joined me. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Douglas. The pleasure is mine.
Thank you. And you talked to Joyce Balesia. What was her reaction when that accusation was made and just before the official announcement was made? Let's have that soundbite.
I'm happy you said allegations. You know, some people say politics is a dirty game. This time in ZANU-PF, it has become dirtier. I have no capacity of doing those things. There is no way, and nobody has ever even suggested to me that this thing that you're trying to do, VP, is wrong. Mind you, I have been in the capacity of a vice president for the past 10 years, and I have been acting most of the time His Excellency is away. And I don't think there is any time anyone of his security details might tell him that the vice president, when he was acting, invited us to sit over a plot of that nature. No ways. Mind you, I'm a Christian, a true Christian. I don't believe in killing. I don't believe in hating. I don't believe in making somebody suffering. It's politicking. These are some of the things that were started towards Congress. We were, some of us, especially myself, was not given a chance to explain, even to discuss some of these things. Few times I've been talking about them, telling people that I have no capacity. I am not in a position to organize anybody to do such harm to anyone.
Blessings, you talked to her, and listening to her there react to that accusation, I sense some sort of bitterness, some anger, some disappointment.
Indeed. I mean, like she also indicated in that exclusive interview that she has been with Mr. Mugabe all her life, and she considers Mr. Mugabe as his father. They were in Mozambique together from 1975 during the Liberation War. But you know, Douglas, this is politics, and they say if a leopard wants to eat its young ones, it will first accuse them of smelling like goats. So maybe this is what is happening, you know.
Yes. Dewa in Johannesburg, of course, as she alluded, this is politics. Not actually, she wasn't maybe a threat physically to kill the president. But how do you think, how serious a threat was she to Mugabe politically? Are you there? Mr. Mazinga?
Hello?
Yes, are you there?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Did you hear my question?
Yes, please, come again.
I was asking that as Ms. Majuru said, she was no threat to the president physically. Of course, she wouldn't kill him. But how serious a threat was she to him politically, you think?
Sorry, you're breaking up. Sorry, please come again.
I'm asking how much a threat of was Majuru to Mugabe politically?
Well, you asked how if he's a threat to Mugabe.
Yes.
Well, I think this is a really dirty politicking, which for any dissenting analyst is clear that President Mugabe for a long time has always used these kinds of machinations to accuse opponents before pouncing on them and decimating them. If you look at the political career of Dr. Joshua Nkomo, formerly also a vice president to Mugabe, it was the same script that was used. It was the same script. Nkomo was accused of treason, of trying to kill Mugabe, hounded out of the country, persecuted. And the same would take care of another threat to political power of Mugabe. He was subjected to the same things. The same happened to Tsvangirai, to Ndabani Mthole, even to Muzore. All these opponents were harassed and subjected to these kinds of accusations. So I do not believe that Mujuru is a threat at all. If anything, this is just hype, politicking, dirty politics, and the tricks that have been used before.
Was Mujuru's loyalty to Mugabe in question? There are many people who think maybe she was very loyal.
Well, yes, but what you need to understand is that dictatorship punishes ambition. So this is what has happened with Mujuru. Yes, loyal, but obviously ambitious in the sense that for everyone, with a 90-year-old leader at the helm, they need to look at the post-Mugabe era. And that, I think, is what has been labeled as selling out or the treasonous action of thinking of life beyond Mugabe. Because Mugabe wants to be in power until he dies. So where she has been questioned was to try and think in a way that all people would do post-Mugabe era.
I see. A blessing that those who have said, some others have said that they may be misreading. Okay, the struggle was not between Mugabe and Mujuru. It was a struggle between Mujuru and Mnangagwa. Do you read it that way from your reporting?
I think, yes. If you look at some intellectuals in the party, like Professor Jonathan Moyo, who is the Minister of Information, I think he did a hatchet job on Mujuru in the state-controlled media, which he is in charge of. So they made sure that they tarnished their name. And my colleague Mavinga is alluding to, these accusations of treason. I think Mujuru must be in jail by now if it was that serious, right? But after accusing her of trying to kill him, Mr. Mugabe, I think, went out of the country on more than 5 occasions, leaving her in charge. Mm. So, I mean, honestly.
There's no. Now let's take a look at what the new vice president who will be sworn in tomorrow, what he had to say when asked how she would respond to this replacement.
Obviously, yes. I think it is the vision of our leader, the president, that he must put up. He's putting up a new team. There's now a new team in the party side. He's also he announced yesterday that he's going to have a new team in government. But I would believe that his vision, intention, is to continuously make sure he's a team that can deliver. And I feel honored to be part of that team. I believe that those who fear me are not honest people. They are afraid of relating to an honest person. And those who love me know that my life is a straight one.
Mr. Mazinga, you just had the new vice president say there it's getting a new team that would deliver. How new will the team be when you still have the head the same, being the same for all these years?
I do not believe that we are seeing anything new here, or that there should be any serious expectation for delivery, because the template has not changed. The framework has not changed. And the framework is that Mugabe is solely in charge. And whoever comes in, notwithstanding whatever bright ideas they might have, they are subject to Mugabe's direction. And this is the challenge. So what it means is that we have a continuity of the status quo. We have more of the same. We have not experienced any change within the NDF until Mugabe steps aside or steps into the sunset.
Blessings. Mugabe stepping aside, it seems now most observers, political observers of the country believe, even if he steps aside, he seems to have cemented his the status quo, so to speak.
I don't know. You know, we were having that discussion earlier on with some colleagues. Some are saying that Mr. Mnangagwa is actually Mugabe on steroids. He is going to be worse. But looking at the economic situation in Zimbabwe, where all the economic indicators are pointed south, unemployment is 90%. And you look at industries, the capacity utilization is about 35%. So I don't think anyone who succeeds Mr. Mugabe can continue on that trajectory unless he wants to be removed from office within weeks of being sworn in. So he might be a hardliner, but I don't think he has any choice. You know, he has to change because this policy that Mr. Mugabe has been following is simply not working. Mm. You know, every day you are attacking the West, you are attacking America, you know, but the economy is not performing well. So I don't know. If he wants to survive, he has no choice except to change.
Mr. Mazinga, Mr. Mnangagwa is described as a hardliner, and there are even stories of him kneeling down before the president, and he seems to believe in him so much and what he his style of governance. How do you think he could change if he is that of a sycophant?
Well, I think some of these things might be, you know, media creations, really about perception. Recently, when he was Minister of Justice, Mnangagwa did refuse to sign, you know, death warrants for 97 convicts in the country, arguing that the death sentence is too harsh and should be revisited. So this is an indication that Mnangagwa could be pragmatic, could change, could lead to reforms, but also remember that between 1980 and 1988, Mnangagwa was the head of state security during a time of the Gukurahundi massacres, where some 20,000 Ndebele civilians were massacred in Midlands and Matabeleland provinces. So, and there has been no accountability for that. So that is also a cause for concern. But I would want to agree with Blessing that what could force, you know, Mnangagwa's hand towards reform is the economic situation in the country. For them to, you know, restore investor confidence, it's clear that there is need, absolute need for a restoration of the rule of law, respect for human rights and democratic practices. So this is really where they would be cornered by the economy. And for them to survive the economy, they have to reform.
It's too deep a hole to dig themselves out, don't you think?
It is. But for now, you know, the advice is that if you find yourself in a hole, don't continue digging. But unfortunately, this is what they are doing now. They are still digging. So, you know, you think they've reached an all-time low, but they will continue. That's unfortunately what is happening. So, but like Mr. Mavinga is saying, you know, you can rig elections, but you cannot rig the economy.
I see, understand. Well, let's take a short break. We'll come back and continue our discussion on political development in Zimbabwe right after this short break.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And to AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the political developments in Zimbabwe. Our panelists are my colleague, Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service, and David Dewa Mavinga, a political analyst and human rights lawyer, joining us from Johannesburg, South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Let me go back to Johannesburg to Mr. Mavinga. Now, this purge, where does it leave the party itself, the ruling party? Can it remain united and move ahead together?
Well, what you need to understand about Zimbabwe's ruling party, ZANU-PF, is that the way it works, it operates, is it operates through President Mugabe and excessive use of state infrastructure, of the security forces, of the intelligence, the police, and elements in the military. And therefore, the purging of party members and party structures is unlikely to weaken the party because it is really a shell. Real power resides in the president and in the state. And where we need to look at is the continued loyalty of the security forces and their leadership to Mugabe and the faction that has taken over, which is the Mnangagwa faction. I do not see there being a split in the security forces with some going with Mujuru. And therefore, from that point of view, it is unlikely that there will be a split in the party. And also, if you look at Amai Mujuru and her allies, given the smear campaign and the hatchet jobs in the media by ZANU-PF, former ZANU-PF allies, it is also unlikely that they would decide or choose to go out and form alliances with other political parties. So therefore, the bottom line is that this is a consolidation of Mugabe's power and a vanquishing of his opponents, for now at least.
Same question to you. And secondly, where does this leave the Iron Lady, Grace Mugabe? How does she fit in this equation?
Of course, just to go back to the first question, does this weaken the party? I think I agree with Mavinga that Mr. Mugabe is a Machiavelli character. You know, he rules through deception. But if you study American history, there was Abraham Lincoln. You know, what he did was to form a team of rivals, you know, working together. But in ZANU-PF, it's the exact opposite. Mr. Mugabe is the center of power. So, and there's also a lot of patriotism that go with it. So, if you somebody, one analyst that I was talking to from Zambia, he was looking at what is happening in Zimbabwe, and he was saying that, you know, there are only two ways to leave ZANU-PF. It's either you leave ZANU-PF and go to the National Heroes Acre where heroes are buried, or you leave ZANU-PF and go straight to Chikurubi Maximum Prison. So those are the only two options that you have. If you just leave, you know, your life is not guaranteed, and at times they target your properties. We have seen this happening. So these guys have got farms, they have businesses, so they would rather stay in the party. So they will not leave despite, you know, the bad things that will be happening. And your second question is the First Lady, Dr. Grace Mugabe, in quotation marks, and of course, some call her Gucci Grace because she loves her shopping. You know, I think from what we are seeing now, she seems to be more in charge because when she was in one of the provinces in Masvingo, she warned a minister there, Dzikamai Mavhire, who was the energy minister, who was fired on Tuesday, that you are going to be fired. You know, and she was the one who was going around the country attacking the vice president and saying that, and I quote, "We are going to baby dump you." You know, so this is what has happened. And even at the just ended Congress, Mr. Mugabe said to the people, you know, he was going on, and then the first lady passed him a paper to say, "You have talked too much. It's time to sit down." So he said, even at home, you know, jokingly, I don't know. That's what she does. She controls me now, you know. So at this time, you know, she seems to be a powerful figure. Mr. Mugabe is 90.
I see. Mr. Mavinga, Blessing just mentions rightly that Mr. Mugabe is now 90. And there are people who see what he has done today, is what he has done, the purging of these and replacing, appointing a new vice president, a new team, as anointing a successor. Do you see it that way? And if so, how are the people, ZANU-PF as a party and the people of Zimbabwe willing to accept the, what would that amount to being a monarchy?
Look here, what has happened, the first resolution of the just-ended 6th ZANU-PF Congress was to endorse Mugabe as the party's 2018 presidential candidate for election when he is 94. And the rest, you know, came and was also to give Mugabe all the power to appoint all senior members of the party, ZANU-PF. So these indications are that it's primarily a consolidation of Mugabe's power. The appointment of Mnangagwa as vice president and Pelegezi Lampoko as the second president is not necessarily an anointment of an heir, but rather, you know, a way of stopping Joyce Mujuru, who was really in the ascendance and who had gotten so close to clinching the presidential post power. So it's not necessarily a decision that there is an heir in place. No, it is simply that it is a way of prolonging Mugabe's stay in power, because it will take Mnangagwa and his allies a while for them to be sufficiently organized to wrest power from Mugabe. So this is not it does not necessarily mean that we have an heir apparent, but it certainly boosts Mnangagwa's chances, given that Mugabe is well advanced in age, and you know, the slips of the tongue that he made at the Congress really show that age has taken its toll. So these are the challenges that are there that would put Mnangagwa in a better standing to take over.
Yeah, blessing. The, by the next election in 2018, Comrade Mugabe will be 94 years. How possible is a 94-year-old man capable of running a campaign and winning an election? I mean, and are the people, the party, the people, are they willing to let a 95-year-old man run and win, and by the end of his next term, he'll be 100 years? Is that feasible?
I think if you look at the history of the party itself, that can tell you that what Mr. Mugabe wants is to die in office. And there's an example that I always give you, Douglas, of African leaders who say, if I die, I want to be buried in Jerusalem so that I will rise in 3 days and go back to State House.
Yes.
So you have the same problem in Zimbabwe. Okay, let's look at Mr. Mugabe's deputies. Mrs. Mujuru is the only one, and she's the first female vice president, and she's the only one to be fired. All the vice presidents, four, since 1980, died in office. You know, most of them had cancer that was so advanced, and you'd think that, you know, let this person go and rest, you know, and be with his family. But they all died in office, even though they were critically ill. Four died in office. So this tells you the type of mentality that Mr. Mugabe has. He has no intentions of stepping down, because many would think that, you know, after winning resoundingly, he would hand over power to someone. They won allegedly by two-thirds of the of the electorate. So this is the time to step down. You know, he's 90. But he wants to run for that term that you are saying you'll be 94. And after that, he can run for another term until he's about 99. You see, that's where the problem is.
Yes. Mr. Mavinga, where does this leave the opposition in Zimbabwe, given the turmoil now going on in the ZANU-PF party and those who have been fired or purged? Could they join the opposition and make maybe form a stronger coalition of to contest power from the ZANU-PF?
Well, I do not see realistically the options of the Mujuru faction teaming up with the opposition to have a grand coalition, given the issues that one of the ways in which Mugabe subdues and controls subordinates and party members at a senior level really has been to ensure that he has dossiers and files of their dirty, you know, linen, which he might then suddenly use, or even the, you know, patronage system, so that he can take away the privileges that they got while they were in ZANU-PF. So for that reason, it is unlikely that these people who have been, you know, purged in ZANU-PF would be useful to the opposition in terms of unseating ZANU-PF. And also, unfortunately, at the moment, the opposition has not really found its feet following the events of last year, the 2013 disputed election. And again, the challenge with Zimbabwean politics is that, you know, of the involvement of the state infrastructure in a partisan and politicized fashion in support of the president and his preferred, you know, lieutenants. That makes it very difficult, but there is scope for greater discontent and for a greater resolve within opposition political parties, given that really, in a way, ZANU-PF is disintegrating and fragmenting, and also Mugabe's own hold on the politics is weakening.
Yeah, blessings as we wind down. Mugabe is known to be a strong guy, a strong leader. But in case he left, either through resignation, he can say, nice, I've had enough, or if some, may God forbid, he passed away, would a man like Mnangagwa be able to hold the country together? Would it be a peaceful transition?
It can be, like what Mavinga is saying, that they control the police, they control the army, all the securocrats. But, you know, the problem with Mnangagwa, even within the party, is that he's not that popular, you know, compared to the George. Former Vice President, Joyce Mujuru, who was a grassroots person. Mnangagwa even lost, you know, a parliamentary seat in Kwekwe, and he had to move to a rural constituency, you know, where people can be intimidated. So it's up in the air. So this is why people were precisely saying that, you know, Mr. Mugabe, this issue of succession must be addressed when you are still alive, you know, because what happens if Mr. Mugabe is gone? Nobody knows.
Briefly, in the last 30 seconds, Mr. Mavinga, is this a big deal?
Well, certainly yes, in the sense of a clear position by Mugabe that he has no intention of immediately handing over power to anyone. Yes, it is big in the sense of the way Vice President Joyce Mujuru has been treated by her own allies, which might actually make many others realize, you know, that in fact we might be looking at a Mugabe dynasty or of a bigger, you know, crisis and instability within the country. That might galvanize people within ZANU-PF to begin to organize and say perhaps enough is enough, or perhaps how do we really ensure that we get into a post-Mugabe era before Mugabe, you know, dies or while he is still there. I think this is the big question now in ZANU-PF, and this is why you would find that Mugabe had to address security forces leadership on the eve of this Congress, because it is unlike any other, and it has happened at a time when Mugabe is advanced in age and when there is no certainty in terms of his previous machinations where he would retain control and then move on. This time around, it is not business as usual.
Lastly, and very briefly, there are those who say he may have achieved his goal of a life presidency. Do you agree? Yes or no?
I totally agree.
Thank you very much. Well, gentlemen, we're out of time, and this wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Many thanks to my colleague here, Blessing Zulu, VOA Zimbabwe Service. And thank you to Dewa Mavinga, a political analyst and human rights lawyer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
The pleasure is mine.
Yes, thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you. Our producer has been Jackson Mufunganyi. Our engineer tonight was Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still listen to it if you go to our main website at www.voanews.com and click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much indeed for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, wishing you all the best. Of all
Monday.